All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
That's right. It's another beautiful Wheel Wednesday with Luis from Koenig and my boss himself.
Yeah, whatever, we've done this before, we all know where this is going. How you doing? Nice to see you. Happy Wednesday. Happy Wheel Wednesday.
Happy Wheel Wednesday.
That's right. Today's a good one.
Oh yeah, I'm excited for this one. Yeah, you know what, you know why? Because truthfully, I mean, I'm a fan. You know, Fitment Industries does really cool things, just does everything that you want to rap, like everything you want to rap about when it comes to being a car guy.
You know, you haven't told anybody who's on the podcast.
I know, and I will. Oh, all right.
I just didn't know if you...
It could be any of the guys for Fitment Industries.
My height is always altered in these things.
But right, we decided to bring the two coolest guys from Fitment Industries.
I think they're dope. I just, like, I don't want to start punishing other people just because they didn't join
Shout
us
out to
podcast.
Alex, you know?
All right. Anyhow.
But yo.
We got the dudes from Fitment Industry. And yes, I'm super pumped to have them. Alex, Gels, and
Dakota.
So we got them here. House. What's up, you want to throw them in? Dakota. Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, what's
going
on?
How's it going?
Not bad. How's beautiful Wisconsin treating you?
Actually, it's beautiful today for a change. It's the first beautiful day in a long, 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 long time. Yeah, I can see the sun again.
You guys are coming out of hibernation.
Yes, absolutely. Took the cars out today. We went and grabbed lunch. We did a big cruise with the team over here, and it's really nice.
That's cool.
What's funny? I just watched the recent video, and in the video that you guys just did about making your spouse buy, you know, telling them that you're going to buy car parts, it literally looks like you guys are frozen solid to the point where you're like running back to inside because it's actually cold, but you're actually running inside because you want to go talk about.
Yeah, that was Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's accurate. That is accurate. Yeah.
So when you say it's a beautiful day there, what temperature is it?
Let's see. It's got to be in the 50s.
Yeah, I think it's shooting for 60 today.
I was telling him it's the same thing here, though.
Yeah, that's Wisconsin's short weather, right?
Yeah. This is the fall spring.
This is like almost peaked.
Yeah. And then, 59. And then 2 days later, it's going to be 12.
Yeah, it's going to be 12. We're
you don't got to say
snow
it.
Snow again.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to think about that today. Yeah, you're right.
The same stuff happens here. Maybe not as exaggerated, but it gets pretty cold out of nowhere. Especially in the morning, you know? That those cold starts have a real different meaning.
It's brisk.
Yeah, they do.
So, I think what's been so cool. First off, you guys got so much going on. There's so many things that Fitment Industries is behind. You know, we're so happy to be kind of partnered up with you guys on a lot of different levels, and and you guys just have so much cool stuff going on. So besides the content, what's been some of the cool? Maybe can you give a little behind the scenes sneak thing of maybe what's going on that's super different that people may not be seeing in the content?
I guess a lot of things going on in the background.
Always,
yeah. There's a million things we're doing, but a big thing we've been working on recently is car show planning for 2022 and where we want to go, where we want to visit this year. We're going to lay it out. I think like we have a few set in stone that we always go to, but this time we want to expand a little bit, travel the country. It's always a blast to meet everybody and go to events and check out people's cars in person and do that kind of stuff. So we've been working on that behind the scenes. Otherwise you already know we're pumping out so much content. Whether it's for Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or YouTube, it's on every social media platform. So we're always brewing something up.
It's so dope. It's funny. It's like we were just doing the schedule of events ourselves. So like right now we're full on gearing up for Hyperfest. We're pretty pumped about it.
Sure.
It's been, you know, it's weird. It's like with that whole pandemic thing, I think it brings events to a new level, right? Like there's so many things now that we're ready to hit the track, get back to seeing what's going on, being at events. I feel like we almost lost our way a little bit as far as that feeling that we used to have when we were just doing them all the time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we started really like, you know, take it for granted. It's like, I'm not really maybe feeling this one or, we've been to it the last couple of years or something like that. And then it's like, oh, well, we can't go to any this year. And now it's like, now that they're back, yeah, it's absolutely, it's like, oh my gosh, I've missed this so much. And
yeah, going to Gatlinburg last year was really eye-opening. But on the other side of that, going to SEMA was so different this year. Everything changed. Still a good time because you're in Vegas, you know. Well, but
you know what? Curiosity, like, you know, because we didn't get to go this year, obviously because of a bunch of different reasons and stuff like that. But what was it like? Like, was it just a lot of people tell us that, but we weren't there, so we really didn't get to kind of see that. Like, what was different?
Gotcha. Yeah. So like the mask mandate, you had to wear masks at all times while you were indoors. But besides that and the COVID stuff, it was just it was strange because it was you have your key people that you go and meet there, and the majority of people weren't there. So there was a lot of new brands, which is exciting. When it comes to all different things, there's a lot of people that usually don't get the opportunity to go to SEMA now had booths. So getting to check that out, talk with them was cool, but it kind of sucked at the same time because it's like, that's when you get your chance to go talk with people like Koenig or anyone that you don't normally get to see every day. And it's like, you know, a lot of people weren't there this year.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people had said to me, like, especially like a lot of friends that went and stuff, they're like, it's kind of like the lights were on, but there wasn't really a lot of people home. You know what I mean? Like, but you know, I think they did a really good job for what it was. Right.
Oh, like, absolutely.
This is something that no one has. I mean, and we have went to the show, I think, for it was 39 straight years. This was the only year. This was the only year in the last 39 years that we skipped. And honestly, like, I'm not afraid to say it. We've said it before. Like, we have some salespeople and some different people that would be kind of required to go to these events. That's what it's all about. And they're immunocompromised. And honestly, like, when you come down to it, you know, we're much smaller than you guys as far as people. But with us, we operate the same way. We're all a big family. So, like, if there was any odds of somebody getting sick, it just wasn't worth it. So we
absolutely
made the decision. But I'll tell you, it was weird not being there, because like I've been there. This would have been this would have been my 17th year.
Sixteenth year
consecutively.
Well, and I was gonna say, we did have like the president, because you know, we wanted to have a representative there, so we did have the president show up. But he did talk about that one thing that he kept saying, which was the Tesla thing that he was saying.
Yeah, he gets very jazzed about EVs in the tunnel.
That was kind of neat, not gonna lie. Like, take the escalator down and he gets to take an EV through the tunnel.
Yeah.
It was just weird, but it was kind of cool, and it was convenient because SEMA's a lot of walking.
For sure. I'm like, so here's my thing. My thing is, we have spent, well, I mean, once the South Hall became the Wheel and Tire Hall, right? Because before that, everybody was just into one hall. That's all they had. But now we started to see some other wheel companies spread out a little bit last year. They opted to go to the West Hall, which I selfishly would rather be in because I hear that the bathrooms are new. They have more bathrooms and there's more food stands. And I think if you put those combination together, that's really what SEMA is about for me.
That's where I'd want to be.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's big brain. I didn't even think of it like that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So did you guys get to experience the West Hall for a little while?
Yeah, I Jules didn't go this year.
I wasn't able to go
but,
this year.
But I was there, and we went across everything as much. I still feel there was stuff that I missed because it's so hard to get to every single thing. But checked out. They had new sections up, and like I was saying too, a big focus too was like the overlanding, EVs, Nissan Z. Like I think that was kind of the big stuff that was there. And then a lot of new GR86s. That's where I fell in love with them. Definitely checked out the whole place as much as I possibly could.
Yeah. So you're talking about some of these new cars, and I think it's interesting. So we haven't had in a long time those years where we feel like there's some really good platforms that are still being, you know, tuned, right? We've had some random drops, but nothing cohesive. I think 22 presents and into 23, so 23 models maybe being released even by the end of 22. We kind of open ourselves up to some really dope tuning platforms. Have you guys just dropped a piece of content about the GR86. What's your thoughts? Let's start there. What's your thoughts on that car?
You want to start? You used to have an 86, so.
Yeah, so like I had the first gen FRS for 5 years, I think, mm-hmm. I owned that car, yeah. And I absolutely loved it.
I was just looking at it, too,
the platform itself, like, handled incredibly well. The aftermarket support for it was there. I mean, you had a Subaru engine that, you know, already had a good platform for modifications and things like that, sounded good. Like, the biggest gripe really about it is, like, oh, it wasn't the fastest thing in the world, yeah. And that the torque was just not there. And I think they literally took everything that was good about the first gen,
mm-hmm.
advanced that a little more, but really focused in on that specific, like, torque issue that they suffered from. It was like the torque, like, topped out at the top end,
yeah.
And it just felt laggy. And, you know, a lot of, like, the tuning stuff, you get, like, different headers and you get a tune, was able to kind of accommodate for that. But, you know, with the new 2.4 Boxer in there and a little more horsepower and a lot more torque, you know, I think this car is going to be fantastic. And everyone that I've talked to that's owned one or, like, has theirs right now, they love it. They absolutely yeah. love it. And, you know, I would really like to get my hands on one someday. Yeah, I think they're great cars. I think I like the GR86 a little more than the BRZ,
I'm just the same
as far
way.
As looks
yeah.
and stuff. But I think they killed it. The front end had to grow on me a little bit, but the rest of it, I think they knocked it out of the park.
So it's funny. There's two things about the GR86. First thing is, just going back to, you know, like, a first gen platform. The interesting yeah. part about that car, I had when they first, like, really launched that car. One of my friends did the marketing activations for Scion. So I got okay. to do, they essentially set up almost like a little autocross course, and they said, hey, like, come drive it. So I got to beat the crap out of one of those things. I will say that car has a lot of, there's a lot of fun in that car in the same way that the Miata has, that yeah, you right. can drive the car flat out. And yep. that's what makes the car so much fun. Right, like right. it's got good handling. It's a pretty rigid platform for what it is out of the box. So to kind of put that with that no lift driving style, that's where the car really shows itself.
Right. Absolutely,
yeah, absolutely. It's like, it's not enough to like overdo it. Like, it's yep. it's hard in a sense, like, kind of hard to overdo with it. Like, you can push it to its limits yep. and you're still going to be sitting pretty good. Like, you don't have to, you know, you're not playing with, like, 500 horsepower that it's going right. to, you know, slide out on you or anything like that. You can, yeah, like you said, just like that flat out driving style where you're driving the car. You're not, like, limiting it, you know?
Well, I think too, in the sense that, like, nowadays with social media, I feel everyone has the need to, like, I need to make a 600, 700, yeah. 800, 900 horsepower car, and that's the only way it'll be cool yeah. or fast or yeah. fun. But in reality, I think since owning the Supra, I don't get me wrong, I absolutely love that car. It's one of my dream cars. But what I've learned from it is, you don't need to have a really quick car to have fun. I think still to this day, one of my favorite cars of all time is the Honda S2000. I haven't had more fun driving a car than in an S2000. Not to get away from the GR86. I just haven't got my hands on one, so I can't relate too much to it. But in that sense that you don't need a super fast car to enjoy the vehicle. You can have an NA4 cylinder and still have a blast. You just got to go, you know, on the twisties and yeah. get on some back roads and yeah. have fun with it, or take it to autocross events and stuff like that. But checking out at SEMA, that, because I'll admit, I kind of hopped on the bandwagon. I think everyone does this initially. A new car comes out and it's like, I don't know. It's yeah. it's okay, but... They didn't turbocharge it, so I literally don't care.
It's not
right.
But no, after checking it out and seeing aftermarket parts on them and lowered on wheels, and oh, it's like, oh my God, they killed it. It does look really good. They did a really good job with this
yeah.
thing. And fixing the few small things from the first gen, I think, yeah, it's an all-around fantastic vehicle.
And, well, and call me naive here, but you naive. Can tell me, you know. But, like, for example, like Jonathan Castro, that's the platform he runs, correct?
Well, I don't. Think yeah, I mean, his the first gen one he did, I think actually they're building a new one, like because he's under that Papadakis flag, so yeah,
the reason why I say that is because one. You know, the mods are available to kind of make that run power correctly. I mean,
yeah, but I mean,
if you Castro could, you know,
yeah, I mean, running like, it on not, the track, not that I want to shut that, I mean, I agree with you, but the only thing I'm going to say about that is that when you drive a car that's developed by Stefan Papadakis, you're not driving. I mean, he took a Corolla and made it rear wheel drive. You know what I mean? Like, we're not exactly talking about the same cars, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's a killer platform, and you'll start to see it. I saw the car at I think I saw it at one of the auto shows. I remember staring at it on an angle, and mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, there's the new Z.
Yeah, yeah, the front,
right? The front
kind of does.
It's got that open
yeah.
grill.
Oh yeah, like it's so weird how the two cars, if you catch it on a front three quarter view, how they look so close in that front. Except you look at the GR86 and you go, wow, that bumper is really aggressive. That must be the Nismo version.
Yeah. The new Z is definitely like a blank slate. And that car was a lot smaller in person than I was anticipating. Really? Now, granted, I am a big boy, but that was, I really enjoy that car too. I think that's one that grew on me heavily, and I really enjoy that one as well.
Yeah. So you guys, have you gotten your hands physically on a GR86 yet? No, right?
No. Our buddies up at MA Performance, they just recently picked one up. So yeah. I'm itching to go and test drive that one out.
Yeah, I told Charlie instantly, because they're, you know, looking for some stuff for it. And they're like, hey, could you guys benefit from doing any content? I'm like, you get that thing over here right now.
Right.
Because I need to drive one.
Yeah. So I'm interested, like, you know, especially since we both fall into that wheel and tire segment. It's interesting to see me. I know another friend of ours that, you know, used to work for S3 Magazine, Sean Bradford, he just got one. And so he put some, it looks like 17.9 out of 30 all the way around. And it looks good in the rear. It looks like they cambered it a little bit. And then in the front, obviously, it was, you know, a little bit poking, but the right size tire can be massaged to kind of give it that right look. So have you had any feedback yet about what the right wheel fitment is going to be?
Yeah, because, you know, when we look back at, like, the previous gen, I would argue that, like, an 18.9.5, you know, plus 40 to plus 38 is right around where you want to be.
Yep.
You know, plus 38 with, like, a 255, 35 tire, you get a decent tire on there, and it looks really good. And I think the same setup with the new gen, they're running into a little bit of issue because on the rear fenders and the rear quarters, they got those little like winglets.
Yep.
And that's like running into some like rubbing issues apparently.
Interesting.
With like the similar fitments. So I think people are having to like go up in the offset to like a plus 40 or drop that width down or something.
I see what you're talking about.
It's causing a little bit of issues with some people. That's the feedback that I've heard, but everything else seems to be pretty similar.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like we've seen these before where not just even the winglets, but like where they have the rear quarters end up having that really big lip. And sometimes when you try to take a car like that and you try to roll the quarters, it's so easy to crack the paint because you have so much of a lip and so much surface area that you have to move, you know?
Yep.
So it gets a little weird. So, you know, it's interesting to see what we're going to be able to get away with on some of these cars. I think I agree with you. The only downside is, you know, when you start getting into wide wheels with really high offsets, that's where the wheel magic starts to fall apart. You know, everybody wants a concave wheel. Everybody wants a big lip. Everybody wants to have, but you can't really do that and clear a brake if you end up in that high offset realm. You know?
Right. Yeah. Anyone that's running, you know, like the 10 plus 22 or 9.5 22, you're going to be running some camber. And, you know, when we're talking offsets like plus 38, plus 40, yeah, that's pretty high, like, you know, high when you go in that. And like you said, you lose kind of the definition of the wheel. You lose the concavity, you know, to be able to clear the brakes of it because you're sucking in the majority of the wheel, you know, and you're not pushing it out. So, yeah, it is kind of interesting that they went that route.
Yeah. I you know, it's so easy, I think, for an OE because they don't, like when they're developing the car, they're thinking about what's best for their performance, what they have.
Yeah.
And we think about it like, all right, what can we do to like make it so different or so much better, you know, and I say better with quotes, but you know, that's where we run into it. So I think you're going to see some high offset stuff. I think you're going to see some people that are going to be able to get away with things like nines at a 30 if they're really willing to play it, you know, lay it down. But I don't think you're going to see these massive wheel and tire packages on these cars, but you really didn't see that with the first gen either.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what route they wanted to go. If they're doing like the autocross thing, yeah, you're looking like a 17x9. Yep. If you're looking for more of like the stance, I know a lot of guys that go with like the bags on the cars, they were looking at like 18.9.5 plus 22 is usually what they want to go to. Sometimes they drop them like a plus 15 or like a plus 12.
Yeah.
You know, but then you're talking a good amount of camber. You're talking about a 215 tire. It's definitely a 9-10 wide. Yeah. So it really depends on the route you want to go, because I've seen some people fit some pretty insane wheels on those cars, upwards of 11, 12 wides on a stock body. And, you know, but they got like,
you can do whatever you want. You just got to make it work.
Yeah. You just got to put a tire that's like a rubber band on it.
Literally.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the new Z?
you got to see this one.
I got to check out. I wish I got to drive it. Now I'm really interested. I think Alex is gonna try and pick one of these up too.
Yeah, he keeps saying that.
Yeah, he says that about every car though. but no, I think Nissan nailed this one too. I think they did it right. They thought of the enthusiasts while making this, and I think you actually said it to me. They made it a blank slate car. You look at it, and it is, I don't want to say basic, but it's very simple. Yeah. But that leaves so much room for aftermarket opportunities, and then obviously pairing it with a manual transmission, twin turbo setup. There's so much potential with these cars.
Yeah, because you know, when we talk about like a blank slate, you know, leave it open to like doing whatever you want to do. Like, mm-hmm. there's no like super aggressive like lines out of nowhere. There's not a ton of aero on, if any aero, yeah. honestly. And you know, I compare that to like when you look at like the new Type R. Like how it comes so aggressive from the factory. Yeah. You got the splitters, you got the side splitters, the spats,
like,
the
nothing
wings,
to do to it.
The diffuser, like everything is there. It's like, okay, well, what do I do now? It's got everything on it. I'm going to lower it, put it on some wheels, maybe get, you know, a couple bolt ons and a tune, and then I'm kind of done with it already. But you know, where the, like Z, you know, it's endless. You could mm-hmm. you could really make that something different.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like. First off, I'm a big fan of the Z platform, have been for a long time, own one. Yep. So like it's easy to kind of get involved in the car. I saw the car out in California, and I will say that what impressed me most about the car that I think pictures don't really do justice on is that the car has, for as vanilla as it appears in a lot of the stock photos, and because I think there's so much color, there's nothing to break it up. Yeah. Right, which I think is going to offer its own incredible opportunity to put some cool things on it, and the car is really going to change appearance in front of your eyes, like
absolutely
almost right away. But there's so much detail in that car, right?
Heritage of it, yeah.
Oh yeah, but like when you look through the car, I swear to you, this is a question I would love to ask. I feel like they took a piece of every single Z generation and put it into the car. The detail,
the back of it kind of looks like a OG, like, you know, first gen Z, you know, just looking at it from the back. But then the front is kind of a dedication to like kind of the newer, you know, platforms and stuff.
Super clean. Mm-hmm. But like when you start to sit in the car and look at the car and look at the attention, the details on the body lines.
We're watching the commercial. I wish you guys could see with us. we're looking at it from top to bottom. Like, this thing is immaculate.
That's exactly how I'm going to stand and dress when I get one.
They can't see it, though. There's a guy. There's literally a guy in a suit just jumping into it, like rubbing the freaking
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you had.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm going to do if I get one. I'm just gonna rub the steering wheel for my
steering
head.
Yeah, send that video to me. Thank you.
I think. That's no problem. We'll tag you in it. What I think is so interesting, more than anything else. All right. So we got the car. We think the car looks good. I was a little iffy on the rear of the car. That's the part that like really I wasn't. It's proportionally correct. It does have all the retro reminiscing parts that you expect. Yep. The part that throws me off a little bit is I just feel like. It just stops short of being something that I thought was a little bit better, but I guess the front can be a similar way. So
yeah, sure. And that's where like I was the same way when I saw it too. I was like, there's something about it. Like it was just like missing like the final touch to it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I came to the conclusion that they're leaving it for us to do it.
Yeah.
Because these have always been enthusiast cars. The Z's have always been like an enthusiast car for people to modify, to do what they want to them, to, you know, drive the crap out of them. I feel like they left that final part up to us, and like they gave us a good clean slate to start with because it's got the power. It's got the good looks to it. It's got that lineage kind of heritage look to it. You look at like the roof line, you look at the rear end of it.
Yeah.
And they did everything right. But like you said, I agree. See? It looks almost like it was just almost perfect.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we're going to leave the rest to you. And I honestly think that's what they were going for.
So I think it's the most incredible part of the car is the part that you don't see until you open the hood. And the fact that they put, you know, that it's a VR30 DETT. So like you're giving people a platform that in a lot of the queues already, they've been running some really incredible times without doing any engine work or anything like that. Those cars are going deep into the 11s.
It's crazy.
That's pretty awesome. And so once you now get to a point where you're going to start to see, because that's the one thing probably the Qs and stuff didn't really have was a lot of people swapping out turbos. But I think you're going to start to see that in the Z And I think the power on these cars is really going to be something.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the transmissions hold up to that power. That's going to be the big make or break.
Issues with that.
Yeah, I went up to, now this is with the automatic trans, but I got to drive MA Performance Q60, and it's a little over 500 horse, and it puts down and it scoots. But man, that transmission, I think, ruined the entire driving experience for me. Completely. It was so doggy and just blah, and not exciting.
The good news is they at least came with a manual transmission.
They got the manual transmission versus, makes and models out there. But
I agree with you. I think what's interesting is, like, I think about the Zs and, like, so like the CD09s and stuff like that they had in the 350s, and then even like the HR tranny that followed it was a pretty good tranny. And so they've had a pretty good run about making their Z platforms have good internals. The question is, you know, will we, well, except for the earlier 350Z stuff that all had to be retrofitted with CD09s. But I think it'll be interesting. I feel like if there's one company that's out there that I can trust to really search the performance internals, I really do think Nissan's probably it.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, because they've continued to do it. You know, if you look at, like, some of the other brands, like, you know, like we look at, like, you know, Subaru or Toyota or anything, like, even with the new Supra, no hate, but, like, yeah, they went with the BMW platform for the engine. Mm-hmm. And it's like Nissan, like, okay, well, you know, we had, you know, the Q series cars, we had the R35s, you know, that they're building. So it's like they still were up there, you know, producing these, like, crazy platforms and crazy power plants that, yeah, no, I agree that I would, that's a good point.
So going, like, so Dakota, you with your Supra now, so you've had it for what, about a year?
Yep.
When you start thinking about that car and all of the internet bully hate that probably comes along with it,
than you can imagine.
Oh, no, I get it, because I think in some weird corners of the internet I might have fueled some of it. But what I'm saying is I have driven the car, and yes, first off, on paper it is a good car. In person, the car drives awesome. The car is a great car, but it's, I think the only problem that car experienced was the fact that people were expecting and hoping for something that they were never going to get. They were never going to get that.
They were hoping for the Mark 4.5 is what they wanted.
Right.
And that's the biggest discussion that I've had with people is, like, look at the Supra lineup. Look at the first gen, you know, if you want to get in the Celica and stuff, and then the Mark II, the Mark III, the Mark IV. They were all different from each other. Yes, there's similarities, but they are different cars. Everyone wanted a Mark IV and a half, or another edition of the Mark IV. That's not what it is.
Started making the Mark IV.
And the Mark V came with the Supra Heritage. If you look at it, it's a rear-wheel drive, six-cylinder car. It has the hips, similar body lines to the predecessors, and then there's stuff like the Heritage line too, so you can put a Mark IV wing on it and stuff like that. I didn't go that route because I don't want it to be a Mark IV. I don't want it to be a Mark IV Supra to have styles that are similar to it. It's a Mark V. It's a separate car. It's a different design, and I am so thankful that they went with BMW to partner with, because it's a good engine. It's a good trans.
If you say burble tune, I'm going to shank you. You understand that,
no,
right?
No, yes. I am on the same page with you there. But if Toyota would have designed that engine, I wouldn't have been able to afford the car or purchase it, because it would have probably been around GTR territory for the price. So keeping that, and not to mention, like, right out of the gate, you have modifications, and these are reliable engines that put down stupid power. I mean, you can make over 500 horse with three modifications. That's insane.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed the car, and I think it gets a lot of flack. And it's just people with a closed mindset.
Yeah, it's just become like a joke to just joke on it. Like, it's just like the thing you do. It's like, BMW engine. Yeah, it's a BMW.
It's like, okay, great. I like BMWs. Cool. I'm not mad about it.
No, and I get that. But, you know, and I will say that, like, on paper, the car is better than the Mark IV ever was. And when you really start to look at it, until you get to the point where you've modified the heck out of a Mark IV, this Supra really does, you know, everything better for a while. You know what I mean? Like, you really have to mod the Mark IV. I think a lot of people get these rosy glasses on when they start to think about cars that were older. I think about it. I was a big
JDM
DSM
Legends,
guy. You know?
Yeah.
And, like, I was saying this story the other week. Like, my friend ended up picking one up, like, nostalgic. And he's like, yo, you got to come over and drive this thing. Like, you know, it feels great. And I went over and drove it, and I'll tell you that, you know, he was like, isn't this awesome? And I remember thinking, like, wow, this is bringing back all the memories of all the crap that I hated about this car. but it also brought back the feelings that, like, you know, there is nothing like that car when you have a really large turbo, like a 3565 or a GT35R, and you do a pull and you hit that like 5,000 mark because the car puts you into the seat like nothing else.
Right.
Well, maybe an Evo. But anyhow, the point is that, you know, these cars that they're, you know, we're seeing generations develop, and, you know, car manufacturers are developing cars to be better than the last versions were. And they did that with the Supra.
Yeah, I agree.
So what happens? So what else we got coming out this year? We have
the Civic Si.
Yep.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring that one up.
Now we're getting into the hairy territory.
I was going to say, I talked so highly of the other cars coming out. This was a car that was like, okay, I didn't really like it when it came out, but guess what? I get to check it out at SEMA. Let's go check it out in person.
Right.
Not feeling this one. Not feeling this one.
Yeah, this was
a Accord Sport. Yeah.
That's exactly what it looks like.
I have mixed feelings on this. Do you remember? Let's see. Let's think about what gen this was. What gen Civic was it? It wasn't 10th gen. What was the blah gen? The gen. it was like 2012, like 2013.
I feel like, yeah.
It was like the eighth or ninth gen.
The eighth and ninth kind of blended together, honestly. Yeah. And they're just kind of, but
I kind of like them.
I'm a big Civic fan. I mean, we own a 10th gen Civic Si too. And I really like them, but yeah, I guess, I don't know. They kind of blended together. It was like, okay, we got another NA four cylinder for the longest time. Yeah. So it was exciting with the 10th gen that they came with the turbo.
Yeah, they had the turbocharged for the Sport, the Si.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I haven't really seen too much of is cause you know, the Accords and some of the later, model year, Hondas, they've come with that 1.5 turbo, the 2.0 turbo. Yep. Engine. I haven't really seen anybody really taking advantage. I feel like the tuning isn't really, not that it's not there, just not really catching on.
Yeah.
Like they have done before. So yeah, I don't know. I look at the car and it kind of gives me the same feeling as I had when they released the new Integra. So
right.
Yeah. That was two back-to-back hit. Actually, it was three, because there's another one that we're going to talk about that I'm sure too, but it was like three back-to-back hits. It was like, oh, okay. Where the new Civic's out, and we're like, all right. And then it was like the Integra, and we're like, oh, okay, we saw some like cool, like, you know, fan renderings of it, like what it could look
like.
We
all thought we were getting a cool
images. And I remember they pulled that thing out. We're just all like,
the TLX?
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
It's huge. It looked so great.
I wanted to like it so bad. I was so excited for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, both those cars for me, at least at this point in time, I've ate my words in the past, but at this point in time, I am not too thrilled about either of those cars.
Yeah,
they just look basic to me. Like, it doesn't look like a Civic to me.
I get that. I think the same. Not that I'm a big fan of the Sentra, because actually, I despise them. But regardless, the Sentra is the same type of way. Like, if you look at what they did, they really made it very much like an Altima now for the latest Sentra. It's got that same. Yeah. Puffier body. It looks like a more substantial car than the Sentra ever did. So that part's good. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the styling is starting to carry through. And the only thing about the Integra is that we all wanted basically, you know, what we knew to be the Integra when it was here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work.
Yeah, it was just, I don't know. It was such a surprise to me. It's like, but at the same time, it's like, you kind of look back at like what the Integra was supposed to be, you know, like compared to like the Civic and stuff like that. And it's just, I don't know. If you look at it that way, yes, compared to the new gen Civic to this new Integra, I guess I get it. I get where they derived it from. That back end looks like a gen coupe.
It does.
I can see
that. They point.
It comes down to it. It's like a BK2 gen coupe.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's always easy to compare. I think these will be really good cars and good commuters, but they're just not enthusiast cars.
Yeah.
Like Nissan killed that. They hit what we wanted. This is like big corporate didn't listen, and they just pumped out what's going to sell to the masses. Yeah. You know, which, and maybe that's what they got to do. Business is business, but it didn't hit right with, I think, a lot of us car enthusiasts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I think you have car companies that are in some tough positions, right? One, you have so many of these companies now that are running into that thing of like, all right, well, I'm supposed to be gearing up to go electric. Like, how long are these platforms going to exist? So they're putting a lot of these cars on world platforms so that they can share them all over the world and utilize, you know, the same platform in multiple different things. And I think you're going to see there's crossover with the Integra and that new Civic. The only difference is I think they I mean, I'm not saying same engine or anything like that. I'm just talking about like for the actual platform itself. So So I think that's what I mean, if people haven't heard this yet, I think you guys have, but it looks like they just killed the STI.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that too.
The third strike to the heart.
Yeah, because if you want to talk about the king of the crap, the new WRX and those plastic fender flares. Ooh. And it's essentially a lowered cross
square plastic fender flares.
Oh my
flares.
Goodness, what I was upset. And then it was like, okay, well, everybody calm down. The STI will still come out and maybe, you know, and then they're like, hey, by the way, we're not going to do that. Like,
yeah.
Because next time we're making it electric. And everyone's like, oh, who
knows? Low effort.
Yeah.
Low
effort. I don't, you know.
I get it.
I don't. I mean, listen, I get the electric part. I'm sure that at some point they'll bring that rally heritage through. They'll put an electric motor in. We all know whether we like it or not, things like Teslas and these electric motor cars, they do pull really hard. So you'll get the performance that it should have. So on paper, again, the new STI, when it finally comes out, maybe will be cool. But there's this thing that they've been gearing up. I really think there might have been some internal discussion. They're like, wow, I think we totally missed this one. So why don't we just abort it?
Do you think so? I wonder. That would be...
It'd be really interesting to sit down in one of those meetings like, all right, guys, so we just launched everything. Everything's unveiled. How are we doing? And they're like, they hate it. Like, everyone hates it.
And they're like, I mean, it's a combination. Like, yeah, they hate it. And we got to get going on the electric thing. Like, there's so many auto manufacturers that are claiming by X year, we will be 100% electric.
We see it more and more every day.
And it's coming down the pipeline.
Yeah. So, no, I agree with you. And I think people are going to have to step up and embrace the electric thing. And here's the thing. I think that if you really step back for a second, first off, we all know everybody hates change, right? So that's there. But if you step back to like this whole tuning thing, it really is about making a car that's better, faster, modifying, doing something different. All that will still exist with electric cars. I mean, we're losing some of the feels that come along with a car, but like battery management systems, you know, they're going to have tunability. They're going to be cars that they're going to make faster and faster. And I think, honestly, that's going to be even worse than anybody's ever imagined. I mean, these cars are going to be super fast out the box.
I don't think we're be ready for that.
Yeah, we're not. Because, yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah, it's I just think about, like, you know, to get your hands on that amount of horsepower in the past and, like, power, like, you were dropping a couple $100,000 on a Lamborghini, like a supercar, or you were really building the crap out of your motor. And it's like, now you can just go buy that.
Yeah.
And for like $50,000. Yeah. And to the general public, that's kind of scary. You seen how people drive?
Yeah, I know. I know Dodge has been going crazy. Yeah. It's like, dude, you're selling those to just random people? Like, kind of dangerous. Yeah. Like, it's a weapon at that point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, we'll find a way. We'll find a way to make it our own. We'll find a way to make them faster, which...
The problem is, though, I'm not worried about speed. And EVs got speed all day. Yeah. The problem is, like, a big reason why I get some of the cars I do is because I love how they sound. Right. I love the modification. I love the intake noise. I love the turbo noise. I love the exhaust sound. Verbal tunes are the best, you know. You know, I just want to get Scott all riled up.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
But that's a big thing. And with electric cars, you lose that, and you lose a huge sense of the
personality of it.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to our first conversation when we started this, is you don't need a fast car to have fun. You need a car you enjoy. And I don't know, at least in this point in the game, I could enjoy one as a daily commuter in EV. But I couldn't have it as my fun car. I think I'd get bored of it so quickly. Once you get used to that power, what's left? The gimmicks, the fart noise, and the infotainment system, and that's about it.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good. I will tell you that one of the oddest things that I've ever experienced is I went to Buttonwillow for an event, and like in between like the sound kind of lulling out of the event, you would hear like this weird tire screeching. You couldn't really place on it on the road course just up and over the hill there. There was a Tesla track day. Like when I tell you it was the most quiet track day I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it was just, you would just hear tire screeching and then like, you know, it was like, yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you lose a little bit, but it's. I think people are going to have to learn to, you know, embrace this stuff because unfortunately it's just not going to go away. Right. It's unfortunate because I think if you're a real car person, you know that this is not the answer they're looking for. They think it is, but it's not. It's not the fix. So, you know, I guess we'll see.
But I think I've noticed, like, even throughout time, like, you know, a car guy kind of changes if you really put it.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Good so point. That's why, like, even for example, like he has his A90 right now. People may be talking shit, like whatever it is. But mm-hmm. I think in time, that car is going to be timeless. I even see it just from an outside perspective. And that's just how we work as a society. We want nostalgia. That's the reason why the 400Z, you know, we're talking about it. It's like, oh, it's a nice one because it has nostalgia with it. But I guarantee you in time, things are going to change, you know, with each platform. You know, I'm not a big fan 100%. Of the Type R, you know, but the Civic Type R, you know, the body, the 10th gen.
10 years.
You know, maybe. But.
Yeah, times change, enthusiasts change, trends change. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, maybe we'll see the next generation. They're going to be going to the car meets and it's going to be.
They're going to be on podcasts like us talking about EVs and.
Remember how we used to have to fill up with gas? How lame was that?
I'll tell you right now, lame, I don't actually. Know that that's terrible. I don't know that right now that's the thing I'm missing. I went to the pump this morning and I literally you know how like I put my card in, I swear to God a frowny face came up on the display before I put the price in. Sure? It's like it's not good, but you know, I don't know. I mean, the good thing about the A90 Super though is that you will have, for decades to come, that car will have Christmas tree lights all over the dash because nobody does Christmas tree lights better than BMW.
Okay, okay.
All right. Well, that's not true. Volkswagen does a pretty good job.
I was going to say, because I own a Volkswagen, and right now it does look like a Christmas tree. So I was going to say, I think they reign king in that department.
They sure do. They sure do.
But yeah, for now at least, the Christmas tree lights have not been on, knock on wood. I took it to work for the first day, and I don't even know how many months it's been. Been trapped inside, haven't gone outside, haven't seen the sun. But she's running good right now.
Yeah, I know. My car is stuck on the lift with a pile of metallic sanding dust from all my little projects I've built over the winter. So it's going to take a lot of foam out of the cannon to get this stuff off.
Yeah.
Are there any other platforms before we let you guys go that you're excited to see, even if they're not coming out this year?
I mean, they keep teasing this new Mazda thing with parent rotary in it. Oh, big I'm kind Mazda of excited about that. Here. Even if it is like a range extender or whatever they're claiming it to be, or if it is the RX, not, I don't know. I keep seeing like patent things pop up like, hey, they just patented this. Like, you can go check it out. And it seems like, okay, yeah, they're definitely doing stuff. But I think that'll be kind of interesting to see what they can try to pull out of their hat with that. But.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, we're done. Oh. Hey, we're back. Man, that was the best technical difficulty we've ever had. We usually are down for a while.
Hey, yes, us too. Us too. Yeah. We've been doing good so far. Yeah, like Joe said, I think Mazda is a big one to see what
they've been awful quiet lately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting though. Like I've played, first off, I don't proclaim to be a big rotary guy. I've played with some of them. I've even put a few Apex seals back in my day, but I really got to be honest with you. Like, I don't know how you make that thing more efficient. Like,
no,
I don't know how
don't.
They.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, it's going to be part of like the hybrid technology. I'm like, that is the most contradictory sentence I've ever heard in my life.
Right. Right. It's like the Dorito diet. It's not working for me yet. But, you know, like I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's
hurting when you fill up. It's like, yeah, that's good. That tank of gas could last me 2 days.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I just don't, you know, it's hard because like I'm in that age bracket, and I guess everybody wants something nostalgic, right? Like I'm in that age bracket where everything I want is a 90s JDM car.
Right.
Like Everything I'm trying to grab now are all the second sloppy seconds of cars that I wanted, you know, years ago. And yeah. I'm like trying to kind of keep the projects full, you know? So mm-hmm. I find myself looking at like MR2s and yeah. you know, I mean, I tried to get a GTR. I tried to get an R33 and an R32 for, I don't know, oh, about 3 years. That didn't work out. So
he almost got the MR2 actually.
And then I just want to do this. I have this bucket list of builds, right? Mm-hmm. K-Swap MR2 is right there.
K-Swap.
I know, right? Because it's crazy. Listen, B-series axles bolt right into the MR2 hubs. These cars, you could put a K24 in this thing, and I'm not a Honda guy. So
yeah.
Like these are all new territories, right?
Yeah, right.
But you could put a turbo on this thing. The cars, you know, without a tremendous amount of money, these cars make 600 700 horsepower to the wheels, and what better platform to put it in besides that little tiny rocket ship that only yeah. weighed about 2700 pounds, and then you know mm-hmm. jam this thing in there in a you know rear engine platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be fun. It'd be unique, interesting, and I think everybody knows somebody with a fast MR2. They're cool cars.
Well, maybe one day you'll know somebody too.
So we got a question for you guys.
Hold you to it.
That someone wrote over to us. If you want to talk about this for a second, between the new Z and the GR86, which is your pick, each of us?
Ooh. Well, I guess we got to go around the room.
Okay. Who starts? I'll start. New Z. Easy. I like the GR86. I think it's great. I think the Z has a little bit more potential than that'd be my pick. I got to see both in person. I really like the Z, and I'm holding Nissan to high expectations, so we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think for me it's really, really gonna come down to the price point of what those things come down at, because like on paper, yeah, Z all day. Owning, you know, an 86 platform in the past, I absolutely love that car. I would absolutely probably want to go with the new one at some point.
Absolutely, probably though.
But the thing is, like, you're talking like $27,000-$28,000 out of the gate for a brand new, you know, enthusiast car
yeah.
versus probably going to be what's about double that for the new Z.
So, yeah. Have they released MSRP on that at all?
So I think, everyone's saying like 40, 50K.
Yeah. So I think they're saying starting at 42. But I think the thing that we know is going to happen is there is, especially now, there's not a shot in hell that car won't come out with a premium. Like,
because so year one and two, YouTube channel already has one on pre-order. They already have a wide body kick picked out for it. They're working on, you know, custom parts for it already. They're going to wait 2 months to get theirs after they launch.
And yep.
Any dealership that has an extra one, it's going to cost $60K to go get it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm sure right now as we speak, TJ Hunt is trading some sort of space to try to get one on order. So.
And like I knew he was gonna get like the new 86, right? Like it's how really everything started. When he was like, "Yeah, I bought three of them."
And fellas, that's what sets us all apart, because we're like, maybe I might get one if I can like
get probably the bills together. Maybe absolutely
like three cash dropped it down hard cash. Yeah. So I don't know. Let's see. What do you want to do?
For me, honestly, it's just. You know, either one. Well, the reason why I say that. No, well, so look, and Scott knows this. I've always looked.
You got to pick one.
Okay, so I've always.
This is like kill, marry, or you know.
I've always wanted a GR86, just because I don't know why. I just love the way the car looks. I'm not the type of dude where I need like this crazy amount of power. As long as I can go down the block and look cool with it, that's just honestly, you know, cool with me. You know what I mean? But as far as the Nissan, the 400Z, obviously it's just a beautiful car. I mean, it reminds me of the old Gen Z.
I honestly think both the cars are.
That's what I mean. Like it's like styling. Kind of yeah. So it's like one of those situations where it's like just like Gel said, it kind of comes down to the price point. You know what I mean?
Oh, not for me. I'd pay double gladly to have that Z.
Comparing really, really two
they are
different platforms. Cars, yeah. I would put the Z in the same bracket as probably the 890 Super, honestly.
Cylinder turbo, much more comparable drive.
Yeah.
And fun fact, I was trying my damnedest to get a new Z instead of the Supra to begin with. But at that time when I was looking, I was contacting all the dealerships in the local area, like, hey, have you heard anything? Like, are pre-orders soon? And they're like, It could be tomorrow or it could be 3 years from now. We literally have no idea. And I was like, well, I'm not going to sit here for 3 years without a car. I was like, all right, I really do enjoy the A90s. I'm going to check them out. I'm going to test drive them. I fell in love with those, bought one. And immediately after I bought it, they're like, we're opening up pre-orders for the new Z. And I was like, yep, that's how my life is, 100%.
And then a manual option.
Yeah. We don't got to talk about that.
Yeah, I agree. I'd rather spend, and this is an age difference, right? Like, but I'm at that point now where I would rather spend and save more money and get something I really want than I would mm-hmm. by getting something I know I can get. And if that means I can't have something for a couple years longer, like, I'll wait. Because, you know, one of the things I think that I have done in the past is I've not settled, but talked myself into getting something because it was obtainable, and then I get it and I'm like
100%,
you know. And so now I'm at that point, like, I think that Z is going to be, and first off, I think the styling of both cars is completely on par, on point. Yes. I think they're great looking cars. I think both cars are going to be fun to drive. My gut feeling is that, and I know people are going to criticize me for this, but I have a feeling that the GR86, you know pound for pound, I think it's probably going to be a better handling car, maybe right out of the box on the track. But then I think the Z is going to have so much more support that I think it's going to just quickly surpass that with just a few tweaks.
I absolutely agree. Because you look at the Z, you already got, like, you know, when you're talking about, like, the engine platform and all the modifications out there ready for it. And it's like, and I ran into the same issue with my FRS too. Yeah. Like, it was like, okay, you do the bolt-ons, you get the tune, help with the torque dip. And it's like, unless you swap it or go at, or, like, you know, force induction of some sort, or a fully built motor and force induction, that's really your next step, because you're kind of capped out where, you know, like the Z, you can modify a few different things here to get way more benefit out mm-hmm. of it, you know, because, you know, spend $700 in exhaust for an 86. It's like, okay, then enjoy your three extra horsepower versus buy a downpipe for 400Z.
Fun fact, Joe's actually can't own the new Z ever because he has never owned a turbocharged or supercharged vehicle. He's only had a naturally aspirated vehicle his entire life. And he's had a lot of cars. Not like he's had one or two. He's had a lot of cars. And somehow he's just avoided forced induction this entire time.
You know that saying, once you go, you never go back? Well, I think what would happen here is you would have to sell everything you own because it's that good. I'm the other way. Like, all my fun cars, I have to have a turbo in.
Yeah, like, I agree.
All right, there's one exception. For some reason, in the last few years, I've really developed this thing where I need to own a C6 Z06, right? Like,
interesting.
So my dad has a C5. Oh, that has nothing to do with it, though. So he has C5 Z06, but, like, I have friends that have a C6 Z06. When I tell you that car is crazy, it handles like it's on rails, it's fast, mm-hmm. it's got an LS, like it's legit. And, like, so now I'm like kind of, and I'm not a core, I was never like a Corvette guy. But that car has maybe converted me. So,
dang.
That's the only car I think I would, not turbo.
I think Corvette's a great platform too. That's definitely a driver oriented car. And they've managed to kind of stay away from the big price hikes, I feel like. Like, they kind of is a steady market for those Corvettes.
Yeah.
And generally can get pretty affordable once you go a little bit older, too.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly where I'll be going, older as I can. So, what else you got?
I actually wanted to ask this last one before we let you guys go. So, do you think we'll get any cars that will have the same legendary status as cars before, one that will have a reputation that spans generations?
Man, that's a great question.
Like, so are we talking like maybe something that's just coming out, or something that hasn't gotten that, like, nostalgic heritage to it yet?
I took it as just like any car that's came out recently or going to come out that has that potential to be. And I'm not tooting my own horn.
I know. I was going
to
say the same thing, though. I was going to say the same thing.
The A90 Supra, I think it will go down in history as a legendary car, because the one thing I noticed was when I got it, every single time I stop at a gas station, it's a 60-year-old dude or older comes up to me and has to talk to me about it for 30 minutes, which I love. I think it's awesome because they're so interested in it. They think it looks so damn good. And that tells me immediately it's a timeless car. It can go across generations and, you know, it looks good. And I think once we get over this whole fad of the BMW thing, like, it's a great car. It's a good bang for the buck, too, especially once these cars – if we ever pop this bubble and they start going into normal prices, and then you get used ones with 60,000 miles and you can hopefully pick one up in the 30K range, like 30 to 38, you know, something cheaper like that or more affordable. You can make, again, 500 horsepower, three mods,
right.
And you're getting it for in the 30s. And then I think after time, once they've been all modded and stuff like that, you'll start seeing people looking for them as they get older.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I can't really say if there's any off the top of my head that I would say are there for me yet. I would say that there's a couple that have been out there for a while that people are starting to realize, hey, I really do like these. And, oh, man, I was looking for them. They're kind of hard to get.
S2K, I feel like, was one S2K. That watched, like, yeah. I watched happen right yep. in front of my face turn into, like, one of those iconic yep. cars.
Evo, Evo 8s and 9s for me, I think, mm-hmm. are starting to be that way. You know, like the RSXs even, you know, try to find, like, a really nice RSX. They're, mm-hmm. they're kind of up there, but.
Subarus probably will be since it'll be electric now.
That.
Yeah, I think there's a good formula if you go back and you start to look at the cars that gain popularity into that timeless realm. Either there's two situations. Either you get one that the car was very nostalgically for that time period tuned, and then all of a sudden they go through the hack stage and then they come back and there's only a few clean survivors, and their survivors right, yeah. get put on a pedestal. I think that's one. Yeah. The second mm-hmm. one is the cars that actually have limited production numbers and a lot of tuning capability. And a good example of that would be like an R35. R35's dropped in price yep. like crazy. And now you're starting mm-hmm. to see that they had, I mean, obviously there's the COVID bubble, but I think you're going to start to see that the car is done in 21. So now whatever's left, there's limited production on the table, just like every other GTR. Right. You're going to start to see those cars really pick up some value over the next five, 6 years.
Every day it's going to get more
yeah.
and more.
Yeah.
R35 was a fantastic car too. Yeah. They did well with that.
I would say, yeah, that's a good point about, like you said, like the hack phase, like people are like, oh yeah, there's a ton of them. We're just going to cut them up. And I think, you know, I feel like the FRS, the first gen FRS BRZs are going to fall into that. I think in like 10 years or so, it's going to be hard to find like a really clean example of one.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of hard not to be.
Cause I mean, I compare those cars are going to be like the new, like 240s.
Yeah,
like, you're already seeing them showing up at like the drift tracks.
Yeah, people use them as track cars,
you know, smashing them up and stuff like that, and, mm-hmm. and swapping out parts from other parts and welding two cars together. Like, you're already seeing that happen for a car that's like, you know, 8 years old, right? And I believe that those will be the new 240s of the world, because we saw the same thing happen to them. Now it's like you see a clean like 240 or S14, and you're like, dang, that's a $20,000 car.
You know, I'll tell you one more car before, and then we'll probably cut this down so you guys can actually do work today. But I think there's another car that's going to filter into that same thing that the Civic did is going to be some of these BMWs, you know, E36, E46.
Yeah.
Even maybe, I don't know about the E90s. I don't really feel like they've gotten there. But like those, that generation, for some reason, there was a lot of them around. And there was a lot of people now that are realizing, oh, wait, these are great drift cars. They have great steering geometry. They're great road, you know, mm-hmm. road track cars. They're great road racing cars. You're going to start to see the platforms get super limited, super hacked up, which, you know, I mean, we can argue we're already there. And then the clean survivors, I think, are going to come back as some cars that are going to hold some value. So I don't know.
Yep.
We'll see.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you even look at the prices of like, you know, E36 M3 or E46 M3 for that matter, and it's
they're expensive.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good call out too. That's a whole nother realm. You know, I think we've been talking a lot of like, you know, Japanese cars, but Euro cars are
going absolutely. The same thing. I mean, we were talking about this Mark IV like 20th anniversary GTIs and things like that.
Yeah.
Those are damn near impossible. Like, You scratch your lip on your 20th anniversary, and if you want to OEM one, you're kind of SOL. Like, you're screwed. And I think that those are another, like, they're slower, but they're a fun, good driver's car. And they're very collectible because there's limited production numbers. They look cool. There's tons of modifications for them. A lot of them got hacked up, and they're gone. I mean, they're even number plated. So I could see those really skyrocketing, too, if you can have a good, clean one.
Yeah, the 20th anniversary, the 337s, that whole R32s. Genre, will really do something there. And I think there's a lot of Audis, right? Like you have a lot of the Avants and stuff that I think will just continue to build, because it's just such a cool car. But the trick is going to be finding the clean ones that are left that actually mechanically work and don't have 452,000 miles on them.
absolutely
guys, thank you for coming on and hanging out with us, because that's really what we were trying to do, just have a hang session, right?
Absolutely. So, it's been too long.
We appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get to do something really cool, and we'll link up at some of these events. We gotta get some stuff going on.
Awesome, appreciate you guys having us. It's always a good time.
Yeah, thank you
and guys, thank you.
Tell the team we said hello.
Yeah, we'll do. Hey, Koenig says hello, guys. Yeah, right.
By the way, you didn't notice that they put the wheels in the back?
I noticed. These are professionals.
We got almost the setup we were talking about before.
It's almost kind of similar to what we got, the setup back here.
That's right, exactly. Right.
What the hell? Yeah, it's like the same wheels and everything.
Yeah.
We planned it too well.
Yeah, that's how we roll. Listen, maybe in just a few weeks we'll... I don't know. We got these new wheels that we're actually going to put something out this year. Maybe we'll do something else. We'll let you go, or maybe we'll send you guys some wheels or something. I don't know.
Do it. Please do it. Yeah. You got my email.
Awesome.
Hit me up.
All right, guys. Talk to you later, guys.
Talk to you later, guys.
So, listen, that doesn't disappoint. All good car talk, right?
Well, and that was kind of the cool conversation. Like, that's the conversation that I wanted to have. Mm-hmm. I think it was a lot of cool things that were said. For example, like even just the concept of that question was asked, like what platform will hold. I generally mean that the A90 will hold. I have a feeling it's just a different. They went a different direction with it. I know I'm kind of pivoting, but I kind of wanted to say this, and I didn't get to say it when we were having the conversation. But it's the truth, man. That car is sick. And I get why people went back on it, but at the same time, I could see why down the line it's going to be one of those cars that holds up.
We'll see. I mean, time will tell.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think it's really going to have to do with how long the car's produced and how many they make and how many people actually, hold on to them as their own. But we'll find out.
Yeah. So, anyways. Yeah, that was a cool convo, man. That was a cool car convo. And thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for being here with us.
Thanks for hanging out with us. We do this thing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. So if you're listening to this on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play, thank you. And if you wouldn't mind heading over to our YouTube channel and clicking that subscribe button. And if you come over to YouTube, you'll also be able to see how red my ears get after I take off my headphones after each one of these podcasts. So that's an added benefit that we bring to you live.
And make sure to tune in every Friday where we have a cool piece of content for you guys. And if you didn't know, which you probably already know, but at 2 p.m., my man right here goes live where he answers all the questions that you guys want to ask. He'll basically answer them.
On Facebook and Instagram.
On Facebook and Instagram. So, come through.
Yep, come through. We'll catch you next week when we do this whole thing all over again.
Peace. Take care of yourself. What up, Max?